Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Sandy Clough.
Hey, good morning. Welcome on this Tuesday in the Mile High City, 25th day of April 2017. Sandy Clough with you on your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, specifically this week, the NFL Draft, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Lots going on here today. The good Dr. Rick Perea will be in studio with us starting at 10:15. To talk about his perspective on the draft. You know, you hear a lot about what teams are doing, interviews they're conducting with players, with prospects over these last few weeks. And I was listening yesterday on a satellite radio program, and I believe it was Peter Schaefer who was talking about various players and what they go through, players he represents. Prospects he represents going into the draft. And he was talking about all of the consultations and all of the interviews. He did not mention psychologists, but perhaps he should have. More and more in the NFL, people are looking through interviews to find out as much as they can about the psychological dimension. You say oftentimes in sports, and you hear maybe more times than you yourself might say this, hey, you can't measure heart. There are tangible things you can measure, but there are certain intangibles that can't be measured. And to a certain extent, that is true. But doing an ongoing, thorough psychological evaluation on a player does have some value that more and more teams are plugging into. And Dr. Perea has been involved with a number of NFL teams in recent years in relation to the draft. So absent specifics, obviously, on players, which Rick is obliged to keep private, getting a sense of what teams are doing here and the breadth of research involved. John Elway, I thought, did a pretty good job yesterday, not in revealing a whole lot because few personnel people, coaches, lead draft executives, personnel people around the league are going to tell you very much, especially this week, something that Elway acknowledged yesterday. But I think he did a good job of talking about all that is involved and trying to anticipate as best you can what other teams are going to do. The teams drafting in front of Denver. And, of course, that order could be shaken up if you're talking about all the teams looking, they say, and by they I mean most national and local observers are talking about all the teams, particularly with top 10 picks, that are looking to trade down, maybe out of the top 10 entirely. And, of course, for every team that trades down, there has to be a team that wants to trade up. Are there as many as six, seven teams that are looking to trade into the top 10? In a draft where the consensus seems to be you could get as much value out of a player with the 25th pick as you might get out of a player with the 8th, 9th, or 10th pick. And you can go back through draft history and conclude certainly that it is an inexact science. And during the program today, we'll get some reaction to what John Elway had to say yesterday, specifically on Joe Mixon. And yes, Ty Sambrylo, who, as far as I can tell, and some of you may have heard more about Ty Sambrylo during this offseason than I have. And if I've missed something, I'll be glad to stand corrected. But to me, Elway was the first Bronco official here in the offseason to talk at length about Ty Sambrylo, talk about Ty Sambrylo as a plausible option. Maybe not the favorite as the starting left tackle for the coming season, but a plausible option at left tackle, given that he played a few games during his rookie year at left tackle before injuring his shoulder. and at that point missing the rest of the season. That would have been 2015. Last year, you know of the elbow problem, that while it didn't wipe out it, season certainly curtailed his effectiveness. What was it, 10 games and 4 starts that he had, Jeff? I think that's right. And he led the team in sacks given up with 7, which is quite something on this team where the Broncos took their share of sacks. Pass protection was not at a premium this year. And in limited duty, only 4 starts and 10 game appearances, Ty Sambrella gave up 7 of those sacks. So to throw him out there, again, reading the tea leaves, is that strictly a smokescreen? Or does it represent an accurate portrayal of conversations that have gone on between the front office, the personnel people, and the coaching staff, particularly the offensive coaches? And if you drill right down to the core, offensive line coach Jeff Davidson, who may or may not have given an indication during this offseason, hey, I can work with this guy. I can make this guy at least a serviceable player. If you feel the need to draft an offensive tackle on any round, go right ahead and do it. But I think we've got a reasonable candidate, and maybe more than one for all we know, that Jeff Davidson says, I'll find you a left tackle. We'll work on developing several guys, and we'll find one, whether you draft a tackle or not. I have my suspicions, and I said this yesterday, I'll say it again today. I think if the Broncos in a draft that is woefully weak when it comes to offensive line prospects, if they don't draft one in the first round, then chances are there won't be much left. That's one of the few positions in this draft on either side of the ball where if you don't get somebody early, you're not going to get anybody who's much good to you, at least for the coming season. If you want a guy to come in and start or compete legitimately for a starting spot on the offensive line, you better get that guy in the first round. We'll leave you with this before we get to Dr. Perea. Peter King of Sports Illustrated came out with his one and only mock draft today. For those interested, he has Christian McCaffrey going number 8 overall in the first round of the Carolina Panthers. At 20, following the selection of Cam Robinson by the Tampa Bay Bucks at 19, he has Ryan Ramczyk, the tackle from Wisconsin, going to Denver at number 20. And King writes, hip surgery soured some on this Division III transfer, but he did dominate Big Ten football in 2016. So that's the speculation coming from Peter King. I can remember only one Bronco coach, executive down through the years, telling the truth about the draft, and we'll talk to that person later. But always telling the truth, Dr. Rick Perea, who will be joining us in studio next.
Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
And at 10:15 on this Tuesday morning, Sandy Clough continuing on Denver Sports Station Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best coverage of the Broncos, the NFL, and this week, of course, the National Football League Draft. Dr. Rick Perea in studio, the preeminent sports psychologist and a busy man, as we have seen over the last few weeks. We crossed paths last week briefly down in Florida.
Yep.
And I know you've been busy throughout this period. And I mentioned earlier in the first segment, I was listening to Peter Schaefer talk on satellite radio yesterday, and he was talking about the process that his players are going through and the people they're conversing with. He talked about medical people, and he talked about coaches, and he talked about administrators, and he talked about personnel people, and he talked about scouts. He didn't mention sports psychologists. He probably should have.
Yes.
Give us your sense of not only from your own perspective, but overall throughout the league, out of 32 teams, how many teams are engaged in serious personality assessments regarding prospects for the upcoming draft?
Well, pretty much every team is, Sandy. You know, every team has an opportunity to consult with psychologists, you know, that you either bring them on as employees or they're external consultants. And pretty much every team does. They realize now how important it is to evaluate from the neck up. I call it the checkup from the neck up. And being able to assess a player's overt and covert behavior is very important. The thing that where people have missed in the past is covert behavior. If you think of covert, think of thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. We can't see that. Okay, overt behavior we can see. Anger control, relationship interaction. We can see those things. But covert, we can't. And that's where many people in the past, Sandy, have missed the boat, is they have not evaluated the covert behavior of these prospects, because that would tell us a lot of information about them. If you go back to the draft when Jamarcus Russell was picked first overall, from the neck down, he was a freak. I mean, he was literally
Al Davis was absolutely in love with him.
Yeah, well, everybody was. But from the neck up, they didn't evaluate his covert behavior, his thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. And when he got into the league, his ability to process through a progression, through a read progression, was very limited because of his dyslexic tendencies. That wasn't even evaluated. See, today we would illuminate that through personality assessments, and that's the difference today, Sandy.
People have been asking me, I say people, it's come up maybe half a dozen times. You used to kind of poo-poo the draft years and years ago. Back in the 90s, you and Steve Harms used to sarcastically refer to the draft as the greatest day in American sports. And, you know, I've always been one who prefers games to events such as the draft. But I think because there's been an evolution in terms of draft evaluation and the dependence on the draft
yes.
is greater now than it might have been back in the day, even though there are fewer rounds. Well, I was looking the other day. There was a year, I think it was 1973, where the Broncos had 19 picks
wow.
in the draft.
Wow.
Well, it was a 17-round draft.
Yeah.
So they had 19 selections. 5 years later, they had 5 selections.
Yeah.
And generally considered, as you look back through Bronco history, the 1973 draft got them Otis Armstrong and Paul Howard and John Grant and this linebacker named Tom Jackson.
Oh, yeah, him.
Quite what became of him. But, yeah, and it was generally considered the best draft in Bronco history, and the draft 5 years later was considered to be the worst because William Gay was their top pick on the second round, and they traded him in a matter of seconds to Detroit where he enjoyed a right. very productive 10-year career. But now it's so much more sophisticated,
yes.
I think. There are fewer mistakes made. I mean, everybody misses on guys. That's why it's good to have a lot of picks. You can, if you have 10 picks, you can make 2 or 3 mistakes and still have a heck of a draft. But in your opinion, these personality assessments in particular, how valuable can they be? They say you can't measure heart. And maybe that's true, but you can kind of evaluate somebody's psychological being.
Oh, yeah.
And get a sense of that heart.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, the reality is we use heart as kind of a connotative meaning to desire. It really doesn't measure heart. What we're measuring is what's called conscientiousness. And conscientiousness is someone's, their motivation, what's in their DNA. When they wake up in the morning, is it in them to want to achieve, or do they need a carrot
yeah.
dangled in front of their face to be motivated? Now, remember the root word of motivation is motive. What is your motive every day when you wake up? So the reality is we don't even want to measure heart. We want to measure the conscientiousness, and that's the ability to have intrinsic motivation instead of extrinsic. And if a player is internally motivated, meaning they have a fire that burns in their DNA, those are the kind of players we want. And we can measure that, Sandy. And here's where the gap is. In organizational performance, like Google and Apple, they've been doing this stuff for years.
Yeah.
And what the NFL, the NBA, and MLB is now starting to discover is, you know what? We can evaluate our players on a covert level, thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, and that's going to give us a window into who they are in the face of adversity. Because you know what? Most of these players have dominated on the high school and college level. Now they're going to get hit in the mouth. How are they going to react to that? And that is the conscientious piece we measure in personality assessments.
The NFL now, as you've noted in prior conversations, starting to use brain scans.
Yes.
What are brain scans specifically?
The brain scan that I'm referring to is called a quantitative EEG, and it's an EEG that measures brain waves that will give us a color-coded readout as to their really the brain health. Previous concussions will show up, brain injuries will show up on these brain scans. So we're now going to the sophisticated route to really look into the cranium, if you will, and to be able to tell health from these prospects as well. I would venture to say, Sandy, within 15 to 20 years, quantitative EEGs will be normative in the evaluation process. We're just now starting to see this because we, you know, players are evaluated by doctors, but they're not being taken through what we call quantitative EEGs. And now with the concussion piece on the table,
right,
that is a very important piece in the assessment as well. So the NFL is really going through some growing pains right now, understanding how psychology influences performance and then also how the brain's health influences performance on a daily basis.
Big story yesterday, Jabril Peppers at the Combine tests positive and what diluted substance, I think, was the
diluted
term.
Sample.
Sample.
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. But yes, diluted sample. All right. In your mind, just in general terms, not specific to Jabril Peppers, the Broncos have taken advantage a couple of times in, what, the last 3 years or so of players like Bradley Roby.
Yep.
And Shane Ray, two mm-hmm. guys you know well
yep.
from your association with the Broncos in 2015, taken advantage of problems they had off the field prior to the draft, resulting in the dropping down, and the Broncos trade up to get Ray, and they stay where they are at 31, and Bradley Roby falls to them. Is that the way we should look at Jabril Peppers as no big deal, or is that some kind of red flag all of a sudden?
No, I don't think it's a red flag. I think it's something that's really kind of inherent in the league. I think Herm Edwards said it earlier today. You know, he's not naive to approximately 30% of his players or 30 players on a 54-man squad probably smoke weed at some point during the year. They just
yeah.
understand
yeah.
when to do it and when not to do
yeah.
it.
Right.
So I think it's kind of being naive to think that, you know, Jabril Peppers is the only one out there. And again, a diluted sample is not necessarily reflective of being guilty of a particular substance. I want people to understand that. Diluted sample means that his urinalysis came back as unreadable because it was diluted. Now, the explanation from his agents has been that he drank a lot of water because
yeah.
he was dehydrated, which may or may not be true. That's not for me to judge. But I want Reuben Foster, I believe, was also
yes.
you know, guilty of a diluted sample. So, you know, I think we don't need to overreact. We need to understand how this is really the one spoke in the wheel. We're evaluating the whole wheel, Sandy, and there's several spokes in that wheel, and that's just one piece. There's many players throughout this league that have, you know, tested positive and then come back and had very successful careers. So I don't think we need to hit the panic button with Jabril Peppers yet or any other player that tests positive. That's just going to provide a little dancing mechanism for the draft. Some people are going to, he's going to drop, and some people are going to say, hey, we'll coach him through that.
Your questions and comments for Dr. Rick Perea coming up as we continue through this first hour.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Sandy Clough.
Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us as we continue on this Tuesday morning in the Mile High City with the draft a little more than 48 hours away. And some questions for Dr. Perea. Most of them very, very good questions. Here's an easy one to start. What advice generally would you give to Paxton Lynch at this point?
Well, Paxton Lynch is a player that really has in the past relied on his physiological characteristics, you know, his height, his athletic ability, his strength in his arm. But at this point in his career, that's all a given. He needs to rely on what we call the upper cortical structure. So he needs to learn to regulate arousal and anxiety really at the core level. And we teach players how to stay on the parasympathetic side of the nervous system. Parasympathetic represents decreased heart rate, decreased respiration, very little muscle tension, clarity of thinking. That's where Paxton Lynch is really going to benefit in his second year, is the clarity of thinking. And the only way you reach that level of what we call cognitive processing or thinking really in a calm manner is to be on that parasympathetic side. And that's through breathing techniques and other imagery techniques. So the key is for the Broncos person to be able to teach him those techniques and help him stay on that parasympathetic side of the nervous system. And then that gives him the chance to be 100% who he is physiologically. As I mentioned before, Jamarcus Russell had all the physiological tools in the world, but he wasn't able to take advantage of it because of the inability to regulate arousal and anxiety.
All right, this is a little more technical. How can a brain scan, EEG, possibly tell you anything if you don't have a sample of how they looked before football? Even Seroscan can't give good data on that. Seems like junk science and liability mitigation more than anything.
No,
an answer to that?
Yeah, sure. It gives us a lot of information. I mean, we can look at a quantitative EEG and look at previous brain injuries through, again, the color-coded aspects. If there's a lot of brain injuries to, let's say, the occipital cortex, which is the back part of the brain that influences vision, there'll be a color code, which will be red or orange, that will tell us that there has been previous brain injuries. Now, those previous brain injuries can be from falling off a bike at 7 years old.
We don't
know if it's necessarily from football per se, but we have an idea of a baseline of where they're at least pre-employment with a particular team. And that's what gives us the information going forward. So then if they do become concussed, we have a baseline to operate from.
Dr. Puria, what about the use of fMRI to look for functional damage? That's from Dwayne.
Dwayne, very good question. Absolutely. fMRI really has given us the window into the brain in the last...
Tell us what fMRI stands for first.
Well, functional. Okay. Magnetic.
Functional, magnetic
yes.
Resonance
imaging. Imaging, yes. So the F is functional. And what that means is we can literally watch a brain fire in 3D on our screen. We do this in our office here at DK2. In Denver, we can see a brain fire in real time. We can look at the brain's functionality, whether from all the different cortexes and how it functions. So yes, that's a very good question, Dwayne, that we can implement going forward as we assess the health of people's brains in the NFL draft.
Good question here too. How can someone improve negative covert behavior?
Through training the brain through two different levels. Overtly, we would look to do it from an environmental perspective, okay? Covertly, we'd look to do environmental and then also training the brain. One of the things, like I said, we do here at DK2 is we use what's called neurofeedback. We literally put a 19-point cap on people's head that's connected to amplifiers where they'll actually watch a screen and, for example, Sandy, they'll learn to fly an airplane just with their thoughts and perceptions. And the brain can be trained at a preconscious level to regulate itself. And the rewards are given at a preconscious level before a brain can even decide to, yeah, I like that or I don't. So from an environmental, it's coaching, and that's what we do as well, coaching/counseling. But then also from the organic level, it's done through neurofeedback. And if you hit it from those two angles, that will really mitigate those covert thoughts. I always tell people this. The cool thing about the brain is it has neuroplasticity, which means it has the capability to be changed. Neurogenesis means we actually create new neurological pathways. Sandy, for the layperson, let's just call it like this. We can take out old furniture and put in new furniture in the brain. The way we used to think doesn't have to be the way we think today or the way going forward. And that's the wonderful thing about the neuroplasticity in the brain is we can restructure the way we think. Take out that old furniture, put in new furniture. If you remember as a kid growing up, when you got new furniture in your house, it felt revitalized. And that's what we do is we shape the brain and we tell people, shape your thoughts so they don't shape you. Because if your thoughts shape you, they take control of your life. If you shape your thoughts, you will take control of your life.
I was reading a piece on Sergio Garcia's winning the Masters in the most recent edition of Sports Illustrated. And if you haven't seen it, I think you'd be fascinated by it because the author of the piece, Alan Shipnuck, does a terrific job of examining the evolution of Sergio Garcia,
yes.
Who had all kinds of covert and obviously overt psychological issues over the years and has reframed, in essence, at least his golfing personality. He's engaged to a gal named Angela Akins, whose father, Marty, quarterbacked Texas during the 1970s and has been of enormous help to Sergio psychologically. Unofficial sports psychologist. That's why I thought of you, as Marty was described in this recent Sports Illustrated piece. Here's what Marty Akins says to Sergio Garcia. I tell him all the time he's the greatest golfer in the world because that's what I believe. As soon as he believes it, the results will show it. When Angela was playing sports, I told her this all the time. What you think you are is what you are.
Absolutely. The brain listens to what we say, Sandy. And if we say, I am the best, I will have a great day. And we give our clients a script to say every day. And it goes something like this. I love my life. I love my family. I love what it feels like to be a great person. Today will be a great day. And if you repeatedly tell yourself that every morning for 3 minutes, then you visualize. Then you really try to get the brain relaxed through diaphragmatic breathing. And you combine those three techniques every single morning, the brain will believe it. Because the brain will believe what you tell it. And so when you talk about Akins with Sergio, you have to believe what you are saying. And if you say it enough, the brain will believe it. And then once the brain believes it, as we say, if you train the brain or if you train the mind, the body will follow.
Shepnuck also passes along some of the wisdom provided by the great Bobby Jones through the years. And at one point, Jones said, the main difficulty offered by a strong breeze, and there were a few strong breezes at Augusta during the Masters this year, arises from its effect upon the mind of the player.
It's not windy until you tell yourself that it's windy, Sandy. That's the key.
Right.
Nothing, I mean, I'll say you right now, Sandy's sitting right next to me and I'll hold my hand out. Put some stress in my hand, Sandy. Put some anxiety in my hand. He can't do it. He cannot put stress in my hand or he cannot put anxiety in my hand because anxiety and stress is not real until we give it legs with our thoughts.
Great stuff as always from Dr. Rick Perea. We'll wrap up next on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Andy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us for a few more moments, and we want to mention once again, Rick, the DK2 motivation and performance. And the fact that we're talking a lot about the draft here, and yet you do a lot with young people. And I know we'll get to youth football and the idea of extending the youth football commitment and the youth football season in a few minutes here, but your business is broad-based, not limited to professional and collegiate organizations.
Right. That's just, you know, one of the things we do is work with the pro and college teams. But, Sandy, where my heart really lies is helping the adolescent athlete. You know, I played high school football here in Colorado, and my wife did too, was a former state champion sprinter. And so we're very partial to high school athletes, and helping them understand the mental side is very important for us. Educating high school coaches. I've spoke at the Colorado High School Coaches Association clinic for several years, and it's really important that we educate high school coaches and high school athletes and parents. Let's not forget about parents, educating them how to put their athlete in a great spot for success. So we're off I-25 in Arapahoe Road, DK2 Motivation and Performance. So come visit us. We have a really cool, innovative office and see what we got because it's pretty cool.
Youth football, let's, while we're at it, ask you about this. Youth football going to spring football.
Yeah, I disagree with this, Sandy, completely, because, you know, the body is developing in adolescence. You know, adolescence is literally defined from 10 and a half to 24 and a half. And the body's developing, and now we're seeing youth football go into spring ball. And I could understand if it were just, you know, shorts and shirts and just doing running through plays and working on fundamentals, footwork, and technique. But it's come to full pads and in contact. And, you know, as I have mentioned many times here, football is a collision sport. It's not a contact sport. And while the body's developing, we're seeing more and more meniscus tears because, you know, bodies are growing so rapidly that they cannot support the weight that they're developing with the tendons and joints around them. So I disagree with it. I think there are some elements in the spring you can use, but I think we've got to really understand what football represents to people and then understand, kind of take out the ego piece, because I think there's a lot of ego involved with parents with that.
We'll get to some football stuff from the text line, the Total Beverage text line at 303-713-1043 in just a moment, but I'm sure you've followed with interest since you spent so much time with the Rockies last year. Their 14-6 start.
Yeah.
And I know for many of the players, you still retain a very close association.
Absolutely.
You got to be thrilled.
I am.
From them. As you watch from somewhat more of a distance this year, what is going on? Is this something sustainable, or is it just another good start? The Rockies have had starts like these before that haven't turned out to be sustainable.
Right. Well, the key is you know, Jeff Breidich is the leadership there, and he's done a great job, very progressive thinker, very good leader. I think they're in place to really sustain this. The key for them is to understand what we call the linear model: form, storm, norm, and perform. You know, they're right now, they're in the performance stage, which is really the last quadrant of what we want. You have to be real careful with that, because teams need to storm at some point, meaning they need to go through some struggles and trials and tribulations, which they have with their pitching staff. So I think the one thing to be cognizant of, that they need to go through that normal progression of form, storm, norm, and perform, and then really reach the performance level in their final quadrant. So that's the only thing I would say to be concerned about. But I love their makeup. I love their mental makeup of their coaches and their players. And as you know, I'm just real close with some of those guys. Cargo's just the best human being in the world. So I'm pulling
and
for
a great leader,
absolutely.
As you have pointed
absolutely.
Out, whether he is going well himself or not, and he's had his ups and downs here early in the season,
yes.
Although he seems to be coming around of late, and yet that doesn't compromise his presence in that clubhouse. Does
not it? One bit. You know, Cargo is a leader and never really realized he was until we illuminated it to him and said, you know what, we need that from you. So he's a huge presence in the clubhouse regarding if he's hitting 188 or 288. He's still a very prominent figure on that team. And I'm hopeful that he'll, you know, everything will come together for him, and I'm sure it will, as he is now a pupil of mine in the past, and he will continue to use my protocols going forward.
Nolan Arenado is one of the best players in baseball.
Yes, sir.
And performing as well as any player is right now in Major League Baseball. And some ways has carried the Rockies offensively, although, again, he's getting some help from Blackman and Cargo, and even Trevor Story starting to come around in the last few games. Can a fellow be a great player and still have things to work on in the leadership
area? Oh, my gosh.
Area?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know,
Arenado's a great player.
Oh, there's no doubt. He's a great player. He can develop, and he knows this, he can develop some of that leadership piece to sprinkle sugar and give a little love to his teammates a little bit more than he has. And he'll do that. He's young, Sandy, and he'll be able to develop that as he goes on. And Cargo's a great role model. You know, it reminds me of kind of DeMarcus and Vaughn, that mentorship. And I think kind of Cargo can mentor him into that piece where he becomes more of that extrinsic leader.
You know, there are a few questions remaining here, and you mentioned earlier some of the brain scans that you work on. Football teams, the NFL has this information. Teams around the league have this information. Do you have to be careful that the information is used in the right way?
Oh, absolutely.
There was a question here on the text line if during contract talk something like this might come up and be used against a player.
Yeah,
prior concussions and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. It has to be very ethical. And, the information we, you know, basically extract from a player is subjective to approval from that player as well. And I want people to understand that, you know, sometimes agents will step in the way of players doing personality assessments, for example. You know, we'll send an assessment to a player and the agent will say, no, we don't want him to do it because it can only hurt him. That's not true. All of our assessments are meant to just illuminate what we call blind spots, not weaknesses. So if the brain scans, if the quantitative EEGs are used in an effort to identify and help a player primarily, that's essentially what we're trying to do. We're not going on a witch hunt. We're not trying to say, hey, this player is damaged goods. But we're trying to just give the team more insurance that their multi-million dollar investment is well thought out and well laid out.
I'll leave you with this and just get a quick reaction before we let you run. This from the same Sergio Garcia piece in Sports Illustrated that we were talking about a few moments ago. Bobby Jones, golf is the closest game to the game we call life. But he could be talking about sports in general, I suppose, when he says you get good breaks. You get bad breaks from good shots, you get good breaks from bad shots, but you have to play the ball where it lies. The breaks will even themselves up in the long run if the run is long enough. And that's essentially your charge. Your
Absolutely.
Mission is to make that run as long as possible.
Absolutely. And then
and there will be ups and downs, and you'll feel cursed
yes.
sometimes by fates, bad stretches in your life, in your career, no matter what your career
yeah.
is. But the key is knowing that those breaks even out.
Yes.
They happen to you for a reason. And if the run is long enough and you stay with it and persevere, perseverance is one of the great qualities in life
and
in sports in particular.
And what we want to do, Sandy, is we never want to be that wolf at the top of the hill. Everybody
yeah.
thinks we do.
Yeah.
We want to be that wolf climbing the hill. The wolf
right.
climbing the hill
right.
is thirsty, is hungry, is focused. When the wolf gets to the top of the hill, it tends to relax and exhale.
Mm.
Be that wolf
like
climbing the hill.
Like defending champions
yeah,
in sports.
Exactly. Be that wolf climbing the hill, and you will never have to worry about complacency. You'll be hungry, you'll be thirsty, and you'll achieve way beyond what you thought you could. Your brain will believe what you tell it. So tell it positive things, people, every day.
Great to see you as always.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.
Great
Dr.
Being
Rick Perea in studio with us. Seth Everett will join us, talk a little Major League Baseball and Rockies specifically. More Rockies talk here in about 15 minutes. And, of course, we'll hear from Cecil Lammy, our fan Broncos insider, who, of course, this week will be covering the NFL draft from Philadelphia, thanks to Tranny Law Offices.